Certainly a rocky day on Thursday. Hot jobs number recovered on Friday. All over the place in pre-market trade. And big week ahead. CPI, PPI. Start of Q1 earnings season. Wednesday, Delta Airlines. Roggy Horner going to give us her thoughts on the market at 8:35. Let's get the week started on pre-market prep.
Welcome to Benzinga's pre-market prep.
This is a volatile puppy here.
It's all about execution styles and strategies.
All right, good morning, traders and investors. We're starting it in the red by a couple handles here at 52.50, 150. Kind of a volatile, choppy pre-market session. We'll see if that carries over into the regular session. The buck up 7 cents at 104.14. TLT down. We've been talking about that. No rate cuts. Down 65 cents at 90.74. Crude down only 58 cents off the lows of the day, 86.23. Gold continues to move higher, up $8 at 23.53.40. Silver going the same way, up 19 cents here at 27.67. And Bitcoin futures, I don't know what Kashkari said, but they liked it. Bitcoin up nearly 8% here, 73,115. We're not going to bring in Triple D. He's taking a much needed day off, but bring in AB. AB, how are you doing? How was the weekend?
Weekend was good, Joel. As you know, I had a buddy from home that was in town, kind of a good little surprise there, and small world indeed. And had a good weekend. Good to be back on Monday, though, and got a lot of stuff to talk about today. You mentioned Bitcoin, so Kashkari over the weekend. His comments, I mean, it'd be hard to construe them as bullish, but yet the price action speaks for itself. So he said he's worried about Bitcoin from a consumer perspective, basically that he said there's a lot of fraud, a lot of hype and confusion. So I'm worried from a consumer perspective. He said Bitcoin has been around for more than a decade, and more than a decade later, there is still no legitimate use case in an advanced democracy. So the Fed would have no reason in adding Bitcoin to its balance sheet when asked about it. But yet the market doesn't care. Bitcoin's pretty much at all-time highs today, right around $72,000. We'll see if it can continue pushing higher. I believe what's the all-time high on this? Like 70.
I look at the futures and then the rolling front month futures contract. That'd be 75,135. That's right up near the old time closing high, which is in basically 74,700. Don't know what Kashkari said. Don't know what the Bitcoin, don't know what the miners are doing. But if you're trading the futures today, and I don't know where this relates to on the cash, but man, you had multiple tops at the 72,500 level in the futures. We have poked our head above that. So that stays above there. Maybe, this is your chance to run back to 75K, but that's just a technical look. That's not fundamental look. Before we get to the news of the day, even though Triple D is out today, he did come with some observations for his trip. And of course, he's treating himself well. He went to Mickey D's and he says, rampant inflation at Mickey D's, nothing on the dollar menu for a dollar. So he's worried about inflation on his vacation. And he stayed out a little bit too late one night, and a Celsius holding drink brought him back to life. So bearish McDonald's, bullish Celsius. If you want to put that spread on, this is not investment advice. But
what about when they start selling Celsius at McDonald's? Like they're doing Krispy Kreme now. You know, how long do we have to wait till they start doing Celsius as well?
Oh boy, I had it once. I just don't, those things are, I just can't really tell. Like, I don't drink it. Like, woo, I feel all strong and everything. I mean, you know, for me, a good cup of Java or something. But speaking of Krispy Kreme, that big donut run that it had off the Mickey D's news, it gave that all back, couldn't fill the gap. Now on the road to recovery. I don't know how many Krispy Kreme traders we have in here, but I would call that about a 3-point move, a buck and a half. So let's see, 1630, 1640, get back half of that move, Friday's high. right there at $16 in Krispy Kreme. Wow, what a tangent on that one.
Yeah, and going back to McDonald's real quick, to Dennis's point, you got to use the app. If you use the app, you can get a lot of deal. I mean, it's like that. You can use the app and they have a deal every single day on there for 20% off your order. So if you're using the app, you can save a few bucks. I do know that McDonald's also is doing a dynamic pricing model where in certain areas, things are more expensive than others. So if you're in, Des Moines, Iowa, it's going to be a little bit cheaper than if you're in certain places. So I don't know exactly where Dennis is, and we're not going to disclose that information. He's probably in some nice, area in Florida, vacation town, something. So it wouldn't surprise me if the prices were a little bit higher there. But again, I mean, it's kind of, you go to anywhere now, Taco Bell, McDonald's, and it's like, geez, what happened? I used to be able to get a meal here for $8, and now you're spending $15, and it's, I don't enjoy it either. But again, if you're looking to save a few extra bucks, use the app at McDonald's, and you will be able to come in a little bit cheaper than if you weren't using that app whatsoever.
All right, bouncing around unchanged here. Big week in the markets. I talked about it at the opening. Thursday, shot across the bow, right? That was Cash Cry, man. I got to put him follow him a little bit closer. Bounced kind of at the end of the day on Thursday. We're undecided. Got the hot jobs number, but what the market always does, it shrugs it off, and you had a nice rally. You had a nice rally on Friday. Today, we're just chopping. Looking at the markets, looking at the fundamental information that's coming out on Tuesday, fundamental information on Wednesday, and then earnings season starting. I think this is a big week for the markets. We pulled back from those all-time highs considerably. And, now we got, now I think holding last week's low, the S&Ps, or maybe how it relates to some of your stocks. But we got to distance ourselves from there, or else I think it'd be looking for a little bit more of a extended correction here in the markets. As I said, more fundamental data coming out this week, and we'll have our man Blue, our boy Blue. He'll be with us on Wednesday, I believe, to break down that data.
Well, let's get to some specific stock news. We'll start with TSM. So Taiwan Semi, we've talked about a couple of other chip stocks that are getting some government money for building new facilities here in the U.S., onshoring these jobs in the manufacturing space. Of course, we learned during COVID-19 when you had supply chain issues, how important semiconductors are, how they go into everything. When there was a shortage in supply chain issues, it helped drive up inflation across the board because it goes in everything from cars to home appliances to phones. The U.S. Commerce Department to award Taiwan Semi $6.6 billion in subsidies and up to $5 billion in low-cost loans for a new semiconductor production in Phoenix, Arizona. So again, I mean, these companies now are building some of these facilities in the United States to onshore the manufacturing of the semiconductors, which, again, I think is really really good for a lot of different reasons. A, what I mentioned from from the national security standpoint, you don't have to be as reliant on China and Taiwan for this stuff. And B, just for the U.S. jobs, I mean, to get these high paying good jobs back in the U.S. I think is a really big deal, and we'll see over time the impact that it has on the economy.
I think also Jamie Dimon in his yearly letter, which I haven't got yet or read yet, but he did talk about AI becoming more important in the economy moving forward. Well, that's not really new news here. These stocks have been holding up pretty well overall. I'll just make my comments specific to TSM, and we are trading up nice in the pre-market. I mean, it's going to be a while before they build those plants, but if you want to, take a look at the pre-market action, of course, a lot of this has been priced in. You had a pre-market high of 144.44. If I was playing this stock from the long side, I'd really like to see it get through that area. You haven't get through that 140.44 and maybe make a challenge at your two-day high. That's way up there at 146.75. And it's so far a mix to red tape. Do see NVIDIA in the green, AMD in the red here. So make sure you get some follow through. This is just for your shorter term traders here. Let's make you get follow through to that pre-market high, and you don't want to go red. Support at the closing price of 141.36. So there's a look at TSM. Let's just look at NVIDIA. Ooh, we got a level of levels in NVIDIA. Look at this. A pair of lows at the same area. Mark 859 there, folks. That's a big level. And then on the upside, let's see here. Your 2 and 3 day high. We're over, actually, three highs over 900. So I'll just call it 903. I'll split those three highs. Once again, always important to take out the pre-market high. AMD had a heck of a day. Do we have some news on AMD? Because that's kind of bucking the trend here. That's down 218, 213 as we speak. Wow, those stocks are trading together. If you're trading this AMD short-term or long-term, you got a pair of lows at 165.60. That's a big level. Now that you're down 220 in the pre-market, a lot of people would like to see that mark at 170.42.
Well, you had AMD was like your big, big loser on last Thursday, closed down, what was it, like 9%. And then on Friday, someone came in, was it Piper Sandler came in and hit it with a price target. The whole market basically rebounded on Friday, but AMD performed well there. SMCI again, you're looking at here. I mean, I don't know. I think all these, you know, there's a lot of these stocks have ran so much that I think people are worried about buying up here. But I think over time, I mean, you got like Diamond's comments and stuff. I think over time, you're going to continue to see strength in a lot of these AI names. It's about being picky though and choosing which ones have the fundamentals to back it up, the growth already there versus the ones that are trading more on hype right now. I mean, let's see. Yeah, you're right. AMD trading down 1.3% this morning. I don't see any specific news here, but this one, I mean, I think depends on your time horizon.
What do you think of the chart here? What do you think? Because Ricky, I believe, who was it? Ricky Zen in Living Focus asked about the SMC. When you look at that SMCI chart here, look at the upper right one. Look at the daily. What's the first thing to hit you, AB? Look at that daily.
It looks a little head and shoulders-y for sure.
A head and shoulders-y, but also, yeah, you had to break over 1,200, right? And then you took it back down to, it's hard to tell here. I have to pull it up. Down to 860. But look at the recovery high on that, okay? Much, much lower high again before it rolled over again, right? So, I mean, I'd say if you're just really trying to hold out long-term, you got a lot of, 860 is a ways away. Best thing I think you could see here is maybe just get, you know, some consolidation and maybe put some lows in above that current low. But I think the most important thing, if you're following this real closely, 1229, 850, 950, 1050, 1150, 12. You've had about a 450-point move. Add 250 to that. Boom, and that takes you up to like 1100, 1050, 1100. That's an important area. Get back half of this move, establish a bid over 1000, and then perhaps make a challenge. But the major resistance comes up at 1016. Boy, I wish they would split that stock. It'd make it a lot easier to follow.
Yeah, and again, this is one of the ones that we talked about where you had, like, the run-up itself. It felt very, you know, euphoric, like, it was way too much, too fast. But then the company actually had, you know, like, some fundamental growth and reasons to back it up. And it's just a question of if there's enough there to back up that move, which I think you'll need some time, you know, to see some time. We'll see. Well, I think like give it like one more report, and if it doesn't kill it in the report, then you'll see the stock drop a lot.
Oh boy! Oh
if,
yeah.
If it does kill it though, then like watch out. Then it could just be establishing a new level. Because again, like I don't think it's going all the way back to where it was at $300, but could I see it pulling back to you know below that head and shoulders pattern level around like 800, 700. Yeah, I could see that pullback, and you know, maybe at that point it becomes attractive for a long-term buy. But right now that chart does scare me a little bit, Joel. But Let's move on from semis. You had more bad news for Boeing over the weekend. You had an engine cover fall off on a Southwest flight. Southwest Airlines says its maintenance teams are reviewing the aircraft. I mean, like, when under while the company's already going under so much scrutiny and investigations from the FAA and you know, these probes from the U.S. government, the fact that they like can't figure it out right now, you'd think if there were any time that they'd be putting extra attention into all these Boeing aircrafts to make sure that no parts are loose or nothing's falling off would be right now. Clearly, there are still some issues to be addressed there. And I mean, you know, you got a new leadership coming in. The CEO is going to resign by the end of the year and have a new one coming in. I just like, I mean, I guess if you're feeling like real, you know, risky, you could try to buy the dip down here and buy it. But it just, it seems like to me, there's too many problems to be buying this stock right now.
Yeah, you did have the pop off the new CEO coming in, right? The resignation, you got that pop, and that was just a relief pop. Everyone that bought the dip here in mid-March sold it. I mean, it's hard to own this stock with this, you know, the kind of news. You see the pictures, and you just kind of just hold your breath. Right now, I'd have to call 182.50 resistance instead of support because pair of lows there. So if you're looking to wiggle out on a gap fill, that's what you need to get to, 182.44. Your next daily low doesn't come in for a while at 178.60. So, you know, if you are trying along here, that's really the next support point for Boeing. And I just, the easier chart, the much easier chart to look at is Love here, Southwest Airlines. It was their plane. We'll figure it out. But look at that. Someone stepping up at $28, man. They want to own this thing and they want to own it big time. So look at it both ways. It holds 28, you know, and probably the range, maybe 27.90 to 28. Is hold there, the bulls win again. If you open below, you breach that level, the offers start piling up there at 28, then you can see kind of a limited support between 26 and 28. Let's take a look. American Airlines, that took a hit last week, didn't recover on Friday. I guess the interesting one here would be Delta, since they're due to report on Wednesday. Had that bump over 48 and a little bit of a pullback here. So maybe see some position squaring in Delta ahead of their report. UAL, I know they had some problems with the pilots that bad week. Wow, down almost every day last week. So that's running into some problems. Airline stocks, they're tough to own. And then, you know, don't look at, don't look now, crude, you know, when's that going to creep in? The higher cost, unless you're doing some really good hedging. I mean, you've had, I'll put the USO up here. You've had a big move in crude oil. So that does not help their expenses.
Yeah. And we did talk about a couple of weeks on the show, you know, I pulled up the AAA gas prices across the country, definitely creeping higher, not helping with inflation right now. And I mean, the one thing I will say, though, about the oil prices, you know, staying elevated is typically you don't see oil. You see oil prices continue to rise when the global economy is doing well. If there is a lot of fears about a huge slowdown in the economy, typically you'll see commodity prices and oil specifically start to kind of come down a little bit because there's not as much demand. So, you know, like, you know, it's kind of a silver lining, I guess, when you're looking at the oil prices creeping higher, because typically that's not great news for stocks and growth stocks. But at least when I'm looking at that, I'm like, OK, well, at least that means that the overall economy should be in decent shape. But I mean, you know, you want to pull up some of these stocks, you know, Chevron, ExxonMobil,
I looked at them and took the eye off Chevron. I mean, I think you're talking about from the demand side, but I think that this rally has been more on the supply side. The supply,
100%. But
you know, they're just restricting the supply. I mean, all those cuts that, you know, are kind of poo-pooed. You know, they're having a you know, material impact on the price of oil. Also, I mean, how is the world just flipped on EVs? I mean, it's like, we don't need them. Like, forget about EVs. We're going to have the combustion engine forever. I mean, we could talk about Tesla, these companies, you know, getting away from it. I think that was one thing that was, bearing down. Also, you got a lot of friction going on in the Middle East. So, Lot of different ways to look at it. ExxonMobil, still kicking myself. That 105 area was just great support for a long time. Broke down, then it was resistance. It's had a nice run. I can't figure this one out, but if you're looking on the laggard trade, CVX is your laggard. That is still some ways from its all-time high. I know they both did pretty big acquisitions, but for some reason, ExxonMobil doing much better. Warren, you know, religiously buying the dip there, not back at your 2022 highs, but certainly a nice move in Oxy. And then what other oil stocks do you want to take a look at?
Those ones particularly, I think Marathon has been doing pretty well. I checked that stock out. What is that? MRO.
Hey guys, with guys and gals, save your tickers. We will do some extended ticker time today. So save them. I wrote down SCCO, I wrote down Tesla, and I wrote down Chipotle, but we'll get to that. Maybe we'll get to that at like 8:55 today. We'll do some ticker time.
Yeah, check out Marathon Oil. It's been on a tear since February.
MRO, yep.
Yep, up more than 30%. I mean, this one, the fundamentals are good too. Ooh, cheap.
Yeah.
A PE ratio of 11. I mean, looking good. So I don't know. I mean, I think you got some opportunities in this space. And just back to your point, Joel, about the supply constraints being what's driving the price here. And I don't disagree, but at the end of the day, when you've had these big slowdowns, even then, I mean, OPEC and whatever is trying to limit supply, and you typically still see the price fall, because despite them trying to cut supply and bring that down, there's just not enough demand to meet it. So, I mean, right now you have the supply constraints and, you know, at least level demand, not falling demand. So it's helping bring these oil prices high overall. I mean, we talked about it last week too, like commodity prices just across the board, whether you're looking at
gold,
whether you're looking at silver, whether you're looking at copper, whether you're looking at, you know, cocoa specifically. I mean, a lot of these, again, I mean, like cocoa is definitely more on the supply side than demand side. I don't think everyone all of a sudden is eating double the amount of chocolate they were a few months ago, but you're having the supply issues there. So I don't know. I mean, I thought we were out of the woods when it came to supply chain issues, you know, post COVID, but clearly not. I mean, clearly there's always things popping up. You've got all this tension and stuff going on in the Middle East. So interesting, you know, whoever, you know, if you've ever thought that trading commodities was boring, obviously the past few months that hasn't been the case.
Yeah, here. Let me see if I can pull this up here. And I did. This is from the I think you pronounce it the Kobisi letter.
I think he's a Michigan guy.
Yeah. He went to the same high school as Raz, I believe. And my nephew, and he posted this on.
Raz is your nephew? No, I'm just kidding.
No, my nephew. I know. He could be. Cocoa, OJ, olive oil, sugar. I mean, you know, how bigger components is mayonnaise? I don't know if you eat a lot. I don't know. Mayonnaise is up 50%, but how often do you buy mayonnaise? You know,
yeah, you buy one jar, it lasts you 3 months. And isn't mayonnaise, I mean, isn't it just made from eggs and oil? I mean,
yeah.
So it just goes in, it just, you would think it tracks the egg prices.
Yeah. I mean, this whole inflation story, I don't think has gone away. I mean, you know, we talked about this before, and I know Triple D likes to look at the TLT. I like to look at the bonds, the 30-year bond. I mean, they're telling you something here. They're telling you that the Fed's not going to June, might not go in September. I mean, and there's just such an expectation for lower rates in this market. And I hope I've been consistent in saying that. The bond market is telling you you're wrong. The TLT is telling you you're wrong here. You had the nice rebound off the October low, and now just retracing the move here. Friday's numbers, not helping anything, right? I mean, I know there were certain revisions in there and whatnot, but I mean, not much in there to say that the Fed is just all gung-ho to be lowering rates.
Well, yeah, and we talked about it, how on Thursday you had this kind of barrage of hawkish Fed speak, not just from Kashkari, but from Austin Goolsbee, the Chicago Fed president as well. And there were so many of them, I forget who said what, but you know, one of them was talking specifically about housing prices. And, you know, that's one of the biggest, I mean, both in terms of how much people are paying for mortgage rates and also rent. That plays a big, big role in our CPI, in our inflation data. And, you know, I mean, one of the Fed speakers that spoke on Thursday said that will be like one of the biggest challenges in bringing inflation back to the 2% target will be trying to lower inflation in the housing space, which if right now housing prices have stayed where, you know, elevated and haven't gone down at all with rates where they're at, what happens if they do cut and then mortgage rates go down a little bit, then the housing prices go way up. So I think specifically for the on the housing side, like we're, you know, that might make the Fed a lot more tentative to cut rates because they know what impact that could have. And I don't know, you know, I guess, yeah, I mean, let's pull up some stocks on how we can play that.
They're looking good, man. I mean, if it's going against conventional higher rates, you think these stocks would be in the dump. But
because I think it's because we let me look up right now what the 30-year, you know, mortgage rate is at, because it got down from, okay, so we're looking at like 7.5%. So it has come down from its peak from about 6 months ago when it topped over at 8%, which was its highest point since 2000, and it was the highest point in 24 years. And now, and I guess that's what it is now they're saying, oh my god, 7.5%, that's great compared to what we were paying, you know, 6 months ago at 8%. But at the end of the day, that's still very high. So you know, I mean, I think again, like if I were the Fed, I'd be looking at the housing prices. And I heard the Chicago, was his Charles Evans, is that name? I don't want to mess up.
One of the Fed governors.
Yeah, speaking about housing prices specifically and how hard that is, because it's like a year lagging. Like they raise rates right now and bring mortgage rates back up, even if immediately you see housing prices start to fall, you don't see that reflected in the CPI or any inflation data for like months and months and months down the road. And that's a lot because in terms of rent, people sign 12-month leases. So, mm-hmm. You know, if I sign a 12-month lease now and then all of a sudden they jack up rates and the apartment I live at has to cut rent a little bit, they're not going to see that for another. Well, they'll see it a little bit sooner, but they won't see the full effect of it till like a year later. So I think that's like one of the things that might not be being talked about enough right now is just how the Fed is going to have to try to level these housing prices to bring inflation lower.
People are moving. They're not moving. You know, they don't want to give up that mortgage, right? Why would you, a lot of people are at low rates, and maybe a lot of these people couldn't afford their houses if they had their rates. You know, certainly don't have the refinancing boom that you had. Let's just take a look at a couple mortgage stocks before we move on here.
Oh, did you see the UWM news last week?
No.
So, okay, there's this new let me pull it up real quick.
I should, because it's a Detroit, Michigan company, or out in the burbs. Yeah,
Pontiac, I think. So there's this new I don't even know what to call it. It's like a hedge fund / Hunter Brook Media. So it's mm-hmm. It's a hedge fund / news outlet. So if you think there's like a conflict of interest, it's not a brand new idea, right? I mean, there's been a lot of hedge funds that do their own reporting and they put out a short report and while having a position on it. But this one's interesting, Hunter Brook Media, because they're really trying to position themselves as like a market news. So it's like, imagine like a new Benzinga, but Benzinga was also making positions and trades and then putting the news out. So it was started by two guys that went to Harvard. They put out a big short report. This was like their inaugural report. Their very first report ever was on UWM, and basically claiming that the company was, you know, using unfair practices, misleading consumers, all this stuff. The company Hunter Brook disclosed in the report that it was short UWM and long Rocket Mortgage. So a little bit, you know, Detroit battle there. But anyway, like it was interesting looking at it. And of course, the company Hunter Brook got a lot of flack saying, oh my god, like how can you guys do this? There's such a big conflict of interest there, this and that. I mean, I don't know what your thoughts on it, Joel. I guess the overall like short report industry. I think my thing is I think if I'm allowed to write a report on how great a stock is and say, hey, look, here's why I love Nvidia, mm-hmm. this and that, and buy the stock, why shouldn't you be allowed to do it on the flip side? But I think, you know, obviously shorting stocks has become very controversial.
I agree with you. I mean, people, I when people talk to ask me about short selling and, you know, thing, I mean, like all these reports that come out, oh, you know, conviction buy list, you got to own it now. I mean, just looking at things on the other side, looking at Rocket here, man, had that great move. I'd say the Bulls got to step in here and defend 13. You had that break to begin to the year, you know, went down to 13, bumped his head against 13. Then you got a little party up to 15, and now you're pulling back. Will old support, old resistance act as new support here, hanging in here? So that's not a bad looking chart here for Rocket. On the monthlies, it's 15. If you're looking for pay dirt on this one, you got a clear 15, get a solid 15 bid. You peaked at 15 in December. You peaked there again in May. United Mortgage, UWM Holdings, big level. I would probably, the short report came out probably on April Fool's Day, knocked it down. You had follow through, but now you got a little bit of recovery here. So I think if you're playing this thing, you know, short side, long side here, we got to look at this through, well, pair of highs from the last two sessions at 656. So that's a pretty good level. 3-day high right there at 655. So a triple top, 4 cents away. Use that as resistance, but might be a little change of heart here. If this could get a strong 660 bid and people are just, you know, instead of shorts covering on the way down, just getting their bids just popped. You know, maybe the complexion will change there for UWM Holdings. That the owner of that also bought the Phoenix Suns.
Yep, Matt Ishbia, owner of the Suns. Yeah, they had like a voicemail from Ishbia in the short report too. That I guess he was talking about Rocket and all this stuff. So
they're competitors.
There's a lot of I heard Dan Gilbert speak the other night. He seems to be doing a lot better, like pretty well. So
good.
Joel, are you a little off topic? Are you driving down to Monroe today? You driving down near Toledo?
What's going on?
You have any guesses?
I know exactly what you're talking about. The eclipse.
Yep.
No. Actually, my daughter's coming over because she has the glasses.
Okay, so I don't know. I mean, are we going to be able to see the eclipse up here?
Supposedly, we're supposed to be able to see it. So, I believe it's supposed to be around our area, I think, after lunch. But I didn't look. I'm like, you know, people make such a big deal out of it. But
yeah, there was a big eclipse a few years ago in 2017, and I was still in school at University of Missouri, and in Columbia, Missouri was one of like the best spots in the whole country to watch it, and people hyped it up so much, and we went out and drove down like 30 minutes south of the town to go to the best spot to see it at. Like, it was cool. But I didn't think, you know, everyone was saying, oh my God, it's going to be life changing, this and that. And then it lasted for 2 minutes and it was over. And I was like, yeah, that was pretty cool. But I didn't, you know, I thought it might have been a little bit overhyped. I was a little bit underwhelmed, I'll say. But maybe, you know, I was like, maybe I'll go check it out again this time again and see if I have a different opinion.
I'm not driving anywhere, I'll tell you right now. I mean, if I can see it from my home, then I'll see it. But I'm not driving down.
And there's no way to trade it. So, I mean, you know.
No. Just, you know, hopefully the power doesn't go out. Anyways. Before we're going to go to our guest here in a minute, S&P's got a quiet little rally going here, back in the green here by six handles, over mid-range on the session. What it feels like today is a choppy area, a choppy day so far. Remember, we have some important economic data coming out later in the week, and then earnings season starting on Friday.
Yeah, let's do a quick preview of all we got this week, because it should be a pretty a pretty big week in terms of what we got coming from the economic side. So today at 1 p.m., Chicago Fed President Austin Goolsbee will do a radio interview. And then on Wednesday, we've got CPI coming out 8:30 in the morning. You also have Fed Governor Michelle Bowman speaking at 8:45. And then Austin Goolsbee will speak again at 12:40. Man, these guys speak a lot. That's all they do, really, is talk, it seems like. And then you have the Fed minutes of coming out from the March FOMC meeting. Then Thursday, initial jobless claims, producer price index, core PPI. And then on Friday, import price index. We'll have some more Fed speak with Bostick and Mary Daly, which, again, a lot of these people just spoke last Thursday and they were pretty hawkish. So it'd be hard to imagine they had some complete turnaround over the weekend unless Powell, you know, called them up on their cell phone and said, hey, stop what, you know, I don't know. But otherwise, I would expect more of the same, considering, again, they just spoke last week. And then on the earnings front, you mentioned Delta on Wednesday. And then Friday, we will start getting the banks, JP Morgan, set to report on Friday, as well as some other banks. So we're going to, this is the start. Maybe we're getting into it. Would this be Q1 earnings season for 2024?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for a majority of the companies. Yeah, let's just do a quick technical. JP Morgan, one of my rare purchases in 2023, unfortunately. Well, fortunately, I bought it. Unfortunately, I didn't buy a lot of other stuff in October. But man, that's hitting a wall here at 200 bucks. I don't want to call it a top, a triple top, but just under 201. There you got a big seller at the point. You had two daily highs, 20072, 20094, all-time closing high right in that area at 20030. JP Morgan, what the straddle is, but it always seems like move up. Well, it used to be $2 or $3, down $2 or $3, but now that it's a $200 stock, probably the same, but you always get a lot of, just going back over the years with JP Morgan, it's just always always good trading action, volatility on earnings day. So we'll see if we get a little pre-earnings run into that report. A strategy Dennis likes to talk about, extracting a little alpha as people are just optimistic, anticipating good earnings from JP Morgan Chase and Company.
Yeah, and usually when you're talking about buying like what's considered to be the best of breed in an industry, you pay a pretty good premium for that stock. But JP Morgan's, I mean, fundamentals are pretty, you know, I think are pretty reasonable. You're looking at a forward PE of around 12, a price to sales of 3.7. So maybe a little bit higher than industry average. But again, that's kind of standard when you're talking about, again, what's considered to be the best of breed. So and then, of course, if the company reports good earnings, then all those numbers and fundamentals start to look even more attractive. So, I mean, I think JP Morgan, I mean, look, like there's a lot of data that backs up when you're buying stocks around their highs, they tend to go higher. There's a reason they're trading at those highs, but you've definitely had a little bit of, trouble here breaking out and getting above the new highs. So it could, 200, that's a very significant level here. On JP Morgan. And it's funny, Joel, you know, we talk about the fundamentals, you talk about the technicals. It's funny how often it feels like the fundamentals and technicals match up perfectly to where, okay, here we're trading at this, you know, precipice right at $200 and then right into a big earnings report. And it's like, okay, now the earnings report can either, you know, give you this technical breakout or, you know, send you lower right from this potential resistance point. So I've always found that interesting, that because some people are always fighting about like, you know, oh, the technicals don't matter, it's all about the fundamentals is what Buffett would say. Or, oh, the fundamentals don't matter, all you got to do is look at the chart, when in reality, it's probably a little bit of both. And again, you have these times where, you know, they match up pretty well in terms of the timing of it.
I think I heard, I'm not sure, but I thought I in that letter, he might have said that they were looking to make like $500 million from the, you know, buying that the other bank, and it might be closer to $2 billion, but don't quote me on that. I think it was something with pretty good expectations. Of course, another thing about these banks is, you know, they're looking they're looking for the lower rates. A lot of the anticipation in the rally in the XLF, you know, get these rates down, get their some of these bad loans, you know, closer off the books. But you certainly can't argue with the chart here in the financials. A little bit late to the rally, but certainly not as steep a pullback as if you had in some other stocks like Apple. And I just real quick, Apple here. Man, you're not bouncing out of this area. This is not what you want to see if you're long Apple. Multiple lows at the 168.50 area. Buyers stepping up in the 168 handle again. Sure, you know, you can lean on it as a level, but that could be a big key for the market if that takes that out. But like the bounces here when you came down to it, yeah, nice bounce, nearly 180. Came down again here at the end of March, a little bit more muted of a bounce. And now you're coming down here and you're staying in this area. So keep an eye at very old important level, not only for itself and for people that own it, but for the market. Second biggest component in the S&P 500. Used to be the first, but old Mr. Softy took it over.
I think we're due for a breakout in Apple here. I'm going to call it. Even though the chart doesn't look great there on the bottom right. I think, like you said, there's going to be buyers coming in at the 160 level. I think at some point we're due for a bounce here on Apple. I think, you know, I think we'll see a bounce here in the next week or two on Apple. That's my call. Okay. Joel, also, I forgot about this. Over the weekend, I went somewhere on a Saturday. I had never been to this place on a Saturday before. I'll never go on a Saturday again, but I left saying, I'm buying this stock. You know where I went?
David Buster's.
No, I wish. That sounds a lot more fun.
A restaurant.
I want to see if the chat can guess it real quick.
You said you went somewhere on a Saturday.
On a Saturday. I see it in the chat. Someone got it. Lots of people getting it.
Oh, Costco.
I'll never go to a Costco again. Joel, oh, I kid you not. I went to the Costco in Livonia on Saturday. The line of people with their carts to check out went through the whole entire store. Everyone was like mad, upset, being I'm never coming back here. They were saying we need to build a new Costco in Michigan now because there were so many people there. The parking lot was entirely full, and I was like trying to do math in my head while I was waiting in the line. I was like, okay, if I'm here, if there's you know, say there's 1,000 people in the store right now and it's 1 p.m. There's probably this many people in here all day, you know, and I got 19 items and my bill was $350. And I mean, people talk about inflation, like the Costco prices, I mean, expensive. And there were just so many people there, Joel. I was like, I'm buying the stock. I have to do it. I don't care what the fundamentals say. I don't care what the chart says. I'm buying the stock.
Did you see the lobster tails there or the crab legs?
No, I had to get out of there. I couldn't even. I was getting overwhelmed. There was too many people. I was like, I'm getting what I need. I was about to just leave my cart with all the stuff and leave because I didn't want to wait in the line. But then I was like, I already drove out here. It took 20 minutes in the parking. I was like, I'm here. I might as well, you know, wait in the line and finish it. I did get the hot dog and soda combo.
Oh, yeah. For a
buck 50. But. You know, I mean, again, it's call me stupid if you okay. want to buy the stock just because of that, but there were just too many people there to not buy the stock. It's a monster. And I mean, people, you know, love it. And I think there's some good international growth going on right now. I think the Costco opened its first store in China a few months ago, and I saw pictures of that and there were lines, you know, out the door for that. Cause there was all this hype around people, you know, for whatever reason, in the Asian countries, they love like the American brands, like the KFCs in Japan are super popular and stuff like that. So I know Costco's got stores down in Mexico and expanding into Latin American countries too. So again, I mean, let me pull up the fundamentals here because I think it's
I'll just take a look here at Costco, looking at the charts here. Wow, you broke a long losing streak in this one. Wow, I haven't seen this in a while. You had 1, 2, 3. That was scratch, but we'll call it 3 out of 4. Now they're just red candles. But you had a considerable losing streak. First up day is on Monday. I would keep a close eye on this one.
Uh-oh, Joel, I think you went on mute. I don't know if you hit the thing on the keyboard or what.
My back?
Yep, you're back.
Yep, I got a loose wire. 717. Looks like a big level here. There's the highs from the last two sessions. So if you can get through that, really a bunch of single highs until you get up until let's call it 734. So Costco, if it's going to go with the market today, red candles going back. Not all down days, but that is not a bad looking chart here for Costco. And they also had the subscriptions, right? Subscriptions bringing in that
everything, Joel. Yeah. I mean, it's I'm buying the stock. I mean, someone in the chat saying it's expensive with a forward PE of 44, which that does look a little high, but then the price to sales is 1.2, which is very low. And someone in the chat said it took you this long to figure this out about Costco. I'll admit, No one called the cops on me or anything. I went with my buddy's card. I don't have my own Costco membership, so someone let me borrow his, and I went with his. So I don't usually go to Costco. I honestly, this is probably my only second time ever at a Costco. I was always my family was a Sam's Club family growing up, which I was thinking about it walking through Costco. It's incredible how similar. I mean, they're basically the same exact store, like down to the products they have, down to the layout. They are like legitimately everything the exact same, besides like at Costco, you have the Kirkland brand versus at Sam's Club, you have the Member's Mark brand. But the problem is, if you want to buy Sam's Club, you have to buy Walmart. So you're getting exposure to the regular grocery store business, not just the wholesale one. Whereas Costco, you get that peer play into that space. And I mean, you know, there was no inflation scaring people off there at Costco. It was as busy as it could be.
Let's go to our disaster stock.
Yeah, I was just going to do that, Joel. We're all on the same page. Oh yeah, Sam, I'm all on that train too. Our disaster of the day, you got Perry, ticker PERI. This is your dog's name too, Joel, isn't it?
Yep.
So Perion Network is a tech company. It offers online advertising and searching solutions to brands, agencies, and publishers. So it's like a SEO and advertising play. The company lowered guidance and issued Q1 outlook below estimates. And the market did not like this whatsoever. And you saw this with Ulta last week too, where you give in this market, you give any notice that your company is that slowing growth or that guidance isn't as good, and you just get absolutely hammered. Down 38% this morning, dropped almost $8, closed at $21 on Friday, now trading right below 13. So ugly day if you're in Perry. I mean, this is a somewhat of a smaller stock, market cap right below $1 billion. So I don't think you're going to see it move the market too much, but you could see some other companies in this space, in the online advertising space, take a hit on this. I mean, Google doesn't really look like it's doing much on it. Meta, not doing much on it.
No, I know. I look for parallel because it is online advertising. I don't follow the stock besides, you know, it's my dog's name. Really with the eye too. Pre-market low 1265. This is a big windfall for the shorts. I'll just go back to 21. If they cannot hold that level, 1161 was your low back in January 2021. Market's ripping here, and we got our guest here, Rocky Horner from Simpler Trading. Why don't you go ahead and bring her on? Good morning, Rocky. How you doing?
Oh man, it's been a heck of a morning. I'm gonna tell everyone, you can run your CPU off your iPhone, because that's exactly what I'm doing right now.
Oh really? Oh man.
You know what? This is good though, because I'm thinking a rough morning, at least I have my coffee. I get to see your smiling face, and we're seeing a resumption after Thursday's crazy volatility. This is great. So I'll hobble along technologically. But yeah, great to see you, my friend.
Oh, tech issues. Oh boy, I could write a book about that, right? But we talked last week, and you know, there's always days where you're like, okay, you know, this is a little bit of a wake up call here. We've had just a lot of a great run in the market, an extended run, a lot of anticipation about, you know, lower rates. And then I believe it was Kashkari, you know, comes out and makes those comments. And I'm like, you know what, they're comments, you know, it's not like Apple, Microsoft, and Google came out and loaded guidance at the same time. But nice rebound on Friday here. And it looks like we're going in the same direction coming into earnings season. Just talk about, like, after you have a big day like that, you get the hop up in the volatility. Like, what technical things do you look for? And more importantly, what are you looking for today?
I love it. So I don't know if we're going to blame Kashkari. I was kind of blaming Meester. Pick your Pokemon card. It probably doesn't matter. We had three different Fed speakers on Thursday. I think we had about 77 Fed events as we went through the week. So it was almost a chipping away at the uncertainty when none of these members would ever just say, look, we know the Fed target rates are saying we're going to cut in either June or July. And we're okay with that. I know. I'm dreaming to even think that. However, okay, by the time Meester's done at 2 p.m., if you take a look at a five-minute chart on, say, from Thursday's action, that's, you know, obviously we started seeing the size and the sell-off. And let's face it, you know, in this world we live in now, whatever move we're going to see, now we have this kind of algorithmic kerosene that's thrown on top of the fire. So 5 years ago, probably wouldn't have been a big a deal. Mm-hmm. Now, yeah, we're seeing the acceleration. But here's what's really interesting that I found about that action. And this is why I really didn't change my overall bullish view or that the Fed's going to cut rates. This was only the third time, arguably the third, definitely the second time that price action exceeded the 68% probability of price movement range. Okay, what the heck does that mean? So if we look back the last 6 months, specifically of Thursdays, and say, hey, what was the price movement range of the NASDAQ? What was the price movement range on the S&P, bonds, et cetera? We exceeded those for only, again, the second or third time this year. So 3 months of trading, only three times this has happened. So I thought, all right, this is just an anomaly. And these are the kind of anomalies that happen when we have just a completely different type of participation from a price perspective, a volume perspective that we've ever had. I mean, this shift, I think, is something we're going to continue to see. It started in 2020 when we didn't care. Right. You know, everyone's doing great. And then fast forward, we're realizing, oh, these are the kind of days that can really be created by that overabundance of participation feeding on panic. I'm bullish. I mean, that's the bottom line.
It's hard not to. I mean, the way this market rebounds, it's funny coincidence. Dennis and I were speaking at the University of Windsor to their investment club on Thursday. And like, it was just as the price action, you know, was happening. And, you know, when you do these kind of lectures, you can comment on the recent price action, but, you know, it's always to try and give them something to look for, you know, say, look forward. And I said, you know, I don't know what the jobs number is going to be. I don't know what earnings are going to be, but if we, you know, you had the big down day of volatility, can we settle down? You know, can we just have, you know, I didn't expect the kind of update that we had, but you just, it's like those bad days, and then another bad day, right? And the crescendo happens, but that didn't. Right now we got stability. We're having a good day here so far. Haven't got up to yesterday's high. What sectors are you looking at here? And I know we've talked to you about many different ones here. Let's talk financials here with the big banks reporting, JP Morgan reporting on Friday. What's your outlook here for the financials with rates coming down? Not exactly a slam dunk.
Oh my gosh, we're right back into financial season. I mean, you know, when we go into earnings season, kicks off with financial, I'll tell you what, maybe this is unpopular. I hate earnings season. I hate it. Y'all remember, and I know I'm sure you remember, when all we would get is an envelope in the mail that would tell us what happened in earnings. No spectacle, no earnings gala. Oh my gosh, I hate this time of year because it adds in volatility we simply do not need. But aside from my whining, I'll stop whining now. Here's what I'm going to look at it. I love the financial sector. Energy is in fuego. We take a look at crude oil. So XLF, XLE, even regional banks have seemingly come back from the dead. We also have industrials. Now, industrials, we know we had that craziness with GE for a moment, but industrials are looking quite good as well. So XLI, anything really related to S&P and Dow I'm really interested in right now. I'm leaving tech alone right now because a Magnificent Seven is not so magnificent. But as we go into the financials, what I'm going to continue to do, which is what we've been doing for about 6 weeks, is let's continue to look for that rally into earnings. I definitely want to be flat when earnings come out. I know some people like to play the volatility. I don't hate my money that much, nor do I think I'm that lucky. So I'll be flat and then I'll wait until the earnings results, the dust settles, and I'll re-engage. But in terms of the overall direction, the rally into earnings has been fantastic in the XLF, those names. And JP Morgan, Bank of America, Goldman, these are some really good names in that sector. So yeah, financials and industrials. Yeah.
Okay. Anything that you're staying away from here that I know you like to look at your long-term averages and anything that's just like, okay, I kind of want to peek at it, but I'm going to lay off.
Yeah, great question. So the watch list is as important as the do not watch list, right? So I love the do not watch list question. You know, I'm going to stay away from things that are popular, but just dumpster fires, Apple, Tesla, which is going to negatively affect things like XLK. I need to really be discerning and a stock picker in the tech corner because tech is not really what I'm all that interested in right now. Semiconductors are really not what I'm all that interested in right now. If I think about some standouts though, Disney, lower weighted in the XLC. Amazon has continued to be a very sturdy name. Mm-hmm. Even though Meta's been wobbly, I'm not going to bet against now the richest man in the world. I guess he overcame Ron. So can't bet against the Zuck. And I would also say, keep an eye on Microsoft. It's reorganized. And even though it's in a mess of a sector in XLK with Apple, I'd keep an eye on Microsoft. But tech is not, for me, where I want to be. I think energy, industrials, financials have been far outperforming the last 4 weeks at least.
What about pharmaceuticals? I know their Barron's didn't go through at all, but they were kind of sour on the on any of the pharma, big pharma, or just I mean, Merck has been a good performer for me. Pfizer's been a dog. I mean, you know, Lilly with the Ozempic. We'll see how that, you know, that, ooh, that's a triple top in Lilly there, folks. Keep an eye on 784.5. Boom, it's right there right now, 785. Anything your pharma catching your attention?
The issue I have with pharma is I don't follow it that much. And the main reason is it just kind of, it's like watching a hockey game. It's a great game. I love hockey, but the goals seem to come out of nowhere. So, and that's probably because I'm just a neophyte fan, but I kind of look at pharma like watching a game of hockey, you know, puck, 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 boom, score. I never know what's going to carry that sector. So I stay away from that, you know, stage okay. trial, stage that. I can't keep up, but XLV has Merck, has Lilly, and XLV is heavily weighted in the Dow and the S&P. So I'm a little bit more XLV where the pharma and healthcare will overlap rather than say an IBB type sector. So I'll focus on the overlap in XLV. I can keep up with that.
Okay. Let's just talk commodities here before we let you go. Bitcoin having one heck of a day. We've had you on for years. I knew you're a hodler in the Bitcoin. You never look at it. So up nearly $5,000 today. Nice move in Bitcoin. You're trimming up here at it, or are you just going to be the hodler that you are?
I got those diamond hands. I have been playing BITO, though. I have been playing BITO. So when I look at Bitcoin, we just had a trade a couple weeks back in BITO, which is basically two futures contracts in that ETF, two Bitcoin futures contracts, a little bit of dollars, a little bit of bonds. But yeah, BITO has been a fun way to trade it. It's got a good liquid option chain. But yeah, when it comes to Bitcoin, you look, if I held from where I own it from to where it is now, you know, I haven't been trimming. This is just one of those things that oddly, I just am hanging on to. That's it.
What about the halving? What about the effects of the halving? Is that something, or are you just like, let it have? And
I mean, how many times we've been through overall this halving? And you know, if you think about, there's nothing really new in Bitcoin anymore. There's not, you know, the first time we had a halving, it was, oh my gosh, but we've done this quite a few times now, right? This is about the second or third time I think we've done this. The overall trend is intact. It's going to get very volatile up here. What kills me is that when I look at Bitcoin in 2023, hugging the 200 down at what, 27,000, 30,000?
Yeah.
You know, Bitcoin is just not talked about. And then now at 70, it's going to entice people to think, oh, this is where I need to get in. And that just kills me. Because if we believe in the narrative, we understand the blockchain narrative. And this to me is on a Bitcoin trade. This is a bet on blockchain for me, you know, for as little as I understand. I've read a couple books. You know, I look at this as I would look at any currency. But when that thing hugs the 200, which it did pretty much throughout 2023, that's where it makes sense to either buy, add, whatever. But up here, you know, I don't want anyone thinking this is a spot to do anything other than short-term trade.
How much of your total portfolio or long-term investments are in Bitcoin or blockchain technology?
I'll tell you exactly what I have. I have Bitcoin that I bought in 2016.
Okay.
And I'm happy to tell everyone I did. I bought $10,000 worth of Bitcoin in 2016. So I thought, why not? And that's it. And the average price of that was, I won't even go there because I sound like a jerk.
Well, 2016's, I mean, there was the big run up. I guess that was the beginning of 2017 when it first ran up to around 20,000 and had the big sell-off. So there's a lot of different price points it could be.
So here's where I bought it. I don't know if you recall in 2016, the rupee crisis, where in India, they were confiscating rupee. My cousins were saying, we're buying Bitcoin, they're confiscating rupee at the same time. That was pretty much the timing for me. And I thought, well, I understand Forex. I've been trading Forex for 16, 17 years. Well, this is digital Forex. This is this digital thing versus the US dollar. So I bought Bitcoin and two other, I think I bought Lite and something else at the time. But
and those haven't worked out as well as the Bitcoin, probably.
No. And that I'd rather be lucky than good.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've been on the line with Roggy Horn. Roddy, you got anything else for us today you want to leave us with?
The main thing is we've got the tailwind in terms of, well, we've got plenty of bullish sentiment in terms of January, June or July in terms of rate cuts. I would focus mostly on July. It's fully discounted for September. We've got an election year that tends to be bullish. This is the trend we have. Let's not let one day shake us loose like Thursday, and we'll continue to move higher. That's what I'm looking for.
Beautiful. Well, thank you, Roggy, for joining us. We will talk to you soon. Have a great Monday and stay green.
Thank you very much. Keep those diamonds.
Keep those diamonds.
Thanks, Roggy. Get through those technical issues. I'm going to be absolutely
Thank you.
All right, Joel. It is about 9 a.m. Time to wrap up. You promised ticker time. So let's at least go through those stocks you mentioned earlier.
Tesla. I wrote down so many. I'm not going to get to them all. We're going to go Tesla. I mean, the street's been throwing everything at it to try and bust it, and it hasn't. It's down here. Never got close. Yeah, it did. It did on Friday. Wow. 160.76 and 160.51 were a couple lows. You hit that on Friday. You got a nice bounce. You're up again. I mean, I don't have any problems if you're leaning on that for, you know, a swing trade that came down there, a nice rally in March. And like I said, Street gave it a lot of bad news. And then it took it pretty well. I think it'd be important today to get to Friday's high, 170.86. And then things open up to that to Thursday's high, way up there. But let's see, poke our head above 170 and maybe close above 170 and see if the bulls are willing to make a stand there in Tesla. But they really tried to rock it last week. And really over the last couple of weeks, there's been several downgrades in that one.
All right. Well, there was your ticker time today. Sorry, I ran out of time. We'll get some more tickers from the chat tomorrow, 9:03 a.m. Eastern time. Thanks for tuning in to Pre-Market Prep. Smash the like, as always, if you haven't. We got live trading starting up right after this. Joel, who do we got coming on with us?
We got T3 coming tomorrow. And I don't know if it's going to be Derek or Red Dog, but maybe they'll throw some Christian Tarp at us. But T3 Tuesday.
Beautiful.
That'll be our guest. So, everyone, thanks for joining us here. Triple D will be back tomorrow. So, back to full scale there, everyone. As far as the S&Ps are concerned, we're knocking on the door Friday's high, 7250, and only eight handles away after a choppy regular session. Thanks for joining us, folks.